Welcome to Wild and Awake, an online retreat where you deepen your consciousness, arouse your courage, and choose with wisdom. We are exploring the question, how do I live my best life right now? I am your host, Kari Vantine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Wild and Awake. Today, we are so blessed to have with us Davina Del Sol. Welcome, Davina.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We're going to have an amazing journey today, but we're going to start off by sharing a little bit about Davina before we jump in there. Davina Del Sol is a deeply trusted, confident advisor, coach, mentor to individuals and families from all over the world. Her clients come from all walks of life and remain treasured connections long after their initial work has concluded. She has an 18-year history as a business owner in the real estate and residential property management field, and a 30-year history in the fields of spiritual studies, coaching, and various healing arts. Davina supports others in their personal journey of transformation to uncover, embrace, and integrate the many brilliant and miraculous facets of their deep core essence, and to transmute any old wounds or disowned fragments of self and distill it all into their own unique healing wisdom. Davina is passionate about practicing and sharing the joys of exploring our consciousness and discovering the previously hidden treasures and gifts that become available as we journey to shift and evolve. She is devoted to continuing to deepen her ability to embody joy, awe, wonder, and gratitude, and to support, encourage, and celebrate others as they discover and deepen their own unique abilities. Thank you, Davina.
Thank you.
Davina, I'd like to jump right in with sort of the core of this whole interview series. So this is Wild and Awake. How do you live your best life right now? And knowing your work, I know that all of your work is really in many ways about how we live our best life right now. And I'm curious, just pulling the beginning of this thread, what is your first response to that question? How do you live your best life right now?
You know, for me, it comes down to being in choice and being in joy and choosing to have the courage to look at everything, to take ownership of it, and to purposely choose to find the magic, to find the gift, to find the joy, to take whatever's on our plate and say, this belongs to me. Whether it's beautiful, whether it's ugly, whether it's stinky, whatever it is, it belongs to me. And I can discover it. I can dive in and I can find the treasure in it. And I can joyfully dig through it and say, I know there's a gift in here. It's having that presupposition that life is for us. And therefore, what could be against us? It's choosing that belief that joy is possible and joy is attainable in any moment based on our practice.
Thank you. And I think there's a number of really salient points in there when we're pulling that thread, right? That no matter what life hands us, and I want to say, you know, a lot of people listening to us today have not had the easiest of lives. They've had, you know, many of us have had tragedy in our lives and huge challenges. And I actually know that the people you work with are not ones who were born necessarily with a silver spoon. Like, people are having really full lives. So when we say something like that we get to be in choice, and somebody has had a really, really hard life, how do you present that? Because it could sound like you're sugarcoating something.
Yeah, it does. It, on the surface, it definitely sounds that way. And it's really important to not only take that on the surface, because when I'm talking about owning something, I'm talking about taking it at its face value first. So if it's something horrific, if it's something mind-blowingly painful, to be with that and to be able to feel that and own that. And in the process of doing that, to know that that is not the end, that is not all there is. And through that doorway of whatever it is, excruciating pain, there is something being born. The same way birth and labor can be painful, it can be messy. There's always something being born, whether when something's dying, when something's in pain, something's being born out of that. And as we shift our focus, and it's not being in denial of what's happening, it's allowing ourselves to be big enough to see them side by side. It's like, I am not engulfed in a river of pain, and I am not engulfed only in joy and denying any one side. I am creating myself as the bigger container and allowing all those rivers to flow through me. So as pain is flowing through me, there's a place where joy is flowing through me. And as fear is flowing through me, there's a place where knowing is flowing through me. And being in that place, like I had a client who just had a really bad car accident. So there's a lot of pain there. There's a lot of grief. There's a lot of physical incapacitation. But at the same time, there's this joy of discovery, the strength and resilience of the body. There's this joy of gratitude of I'm still on the planet. And those things aren't mutually exclusive. So it's taking our focus and saying, I can focus here and debilitate myself. This happened. I can't change it. But I can focus here, not deny this, but bring this thread of joy into this. And when I do that, I'm transforming both. I'm taking the joy and creating fertilizer for the strengthening experience that's happening through my trauma or my tragedy. And I'm taking that trauma and tragedy and I'm infusing it with something beyond the immediate. So I'm taking that in time experience and I'm backing out a little bit and I'm seeing how it makes sense on the continuum. And in doing that, I'm strengthening myself and I'm strengthening my belief in life and I'm choosing to create a stronger foundation of my presupposition that life is good and life is for my growth and my expansion.
Mm. I love that. And the image that I'm having right now is actually one I heard you say before, which is that you're both like being both on the football field, or it would be more like both in the forest, like right on the ground in the earth. Yeah. And then also being able to be up in the, you know, in the blimp,
in the heavens,
floating over, or the in the heavens looking down. And yeah, that capacity, which I think is a learned muscle. It's not certainly isn't something we're taught in the society, but that capacity to be in both places at once, or to go back and forth between them is part of what offers the perspective you're talking about. Does that sound correct?
Absolutely. And developing and strengthening our multidimensional view of our life and life in general is so important, because when we're in time only, we lose the ability to see how that fits into the big picture. And sometimes it's blissful and sometimes it's painful because there's no reference point. And when we add the dimensionality of seeing the continuum and being through time, then we have the sense of meaning. All of a sudden, things make sense. If we're only in the big picture, then we're not really living our life and in our experience. There's people that What was it? Michael Beckwith once said, we didn't come here to be ascended masters. We came to be descended masters. You know, we came to be in the body.
I love that. Yeah. Physical. That, we came up with this physical experience.
Yes. And Osho used to say, Zorba the Buddha, you know, like be like Zorba, but be the Buddha at the same time. And so, you know, I often use the example, like if you're in Navy SEAL training and your best buddy's waterboarding you, you know, and if you're only in time, it makes no sense at all. Yes. Why is that happening? If you back up and you see the continuum, you joined, you went through this training, it's going to save your life in a future date. You see the meaning in it. And so I think that when things are scary or things are traumatic or painful that happen in our life, it's so important to maintain that multidimensional knowing and viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And also the presupposition that we choose to live from is really important to our life experience. If I'm living from a presupposition that life is thwarting me on purpose in every moment, I'm going to be miserable till the day I die. If I live from the presupposition that life has my back and life is somehow in this elegant, exquisite algorithm that it is conspiring to create my highest good in every moment, then regardless of whether I can see it in the moment or not, I have the discipline to look for it. And
that's the piece right there, Davina, isn't it? The discipline to look for it, because that's where, for me, that piece around being sugar-coated, like, we're not necessarily going to see the frosting. It's not necessarily obvious. Sometimes there's, I love a description I've heard you say, which is sometimes life piles a bunch of cow manure in your house.
Yes.
And you have to decide, like, are you going to live in a house that smells like cow manure, or are you going to move it out into the backyard and plant roses in it? And
that's right.
I love that image because it's really, it didn't just happen on its own. There's a choice and an action within it.
That's right. And that's a great description. I was going to use that in a moment. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's so important, and it's a great example. It's like, you know, if somebody does come and deliver a ton of cow manure in your front yard, you know, you can be in the denial and, oh, you know, my yard smells so good. No, it doesn't. You know, you got to own it. It's right there. It's in your face. It's in your yard. But until you own it, you can't do anything with it. Once you own it, you have the choice to say, do I leave it there or do I take it in the backyard? Do I plant roses in it? Do I take what's been given to me, whether I love it or not, and find the highest and best use and turn it into something brilliant, turn it into something useful. And I think that we have that choice with everything that happens to us in our life, whatever it is. Mm. We have the choice to take it and turn it somehow into medicine, into a gift, into wisdom, into knowing, into some kind of understanding or outreach, and give it back to humanity as something beautiful and brilliant.
And I'll just say that is not a natural thing that we are taught to do. I believe in our culture, we're taught to actually take a stand in which somebody else is wrong, and more than likely we're right, and we get to hold a grudge around it. And
yeah,
I know. Yeah. I'm part of this world too. And I try to get up above and look in and say, oh, wow, look at this pattern, the way we do that, the way in general we're taught to hold a grudge or to think ourselves are right. And what that creates within our relationships, within our home life, I think, you know, that is a way that we just get stuck more and more in the, to use the metaphor, the cow manure in the front yard, right?
Yeah.
And there's something that happens. So why or how do people learn to think differently? It's actually a muscle we're talking about.
It is a muscle. And I think that it's a very scary muscle to use in the beginning, because the ego is so strong And its job has been to protect us. I mean, if we had no ego at all, I don't think the ego is a bad thing. The ego is here to protect us. If we had no ego at all, if we saw a mother tiger and she was hungry, we'd say, here, eat me, I'm food. You know, we'd cease to exist. It keeps us on the planet. So the ego has certain boundaries that protect us, and those are valuable. And as we've learned to survive in our life, the ego has made assumptions or okay, I'll never do this again, or I'll have to protect you from this. And some of those things are great. Some of those things now are things that actually harm us. And so it's having the courage to go in, and it's a very scary thing to do that, to go in and have the courage to not always be right, to have the courage to risk looking foolish, to have the courage to look at ourselves instead of projecting on another. And the more in judgment we are, the more painful it is when we look at ourselves, because we're visited by the same judgment we put on other people. So in the beginning, it's a big lesson because it teaches us, oh my gosh, you're so in judgment that when you put the mirror in front of you, you're going to fall over with the shock of your own judgment. And it's a process of learning, but as we do it, it starts to feel so good to be able to be present with another person and have a difference of opinion or see something that maybe you're not comfortable with, but to hold them in the sacred space of this is this person. And if I feel any trigger, it's not them doing it. They're reflecting something to me that lets me go down in the basement of my machinery and adjust stuff that's out of whack. And if I take it that way, you know, if I was working in a big machine shop and somebody came and said, you know, machine 304 is malfunctioning, and I slapped them up against the wall and said, don't tell me that. I mean,
yeah, that's I don't want to hear that. That's personal.
Exactly. How dare you? How dare you? But we do that with people in our lives. Yeah. We get a trigger and we blast them thinking that they're harming us. And so if we can change our discipline to be grateful for the trigger, because, wow, that's allowing me to see something in my machinery that needs to be adjusted. Mm-hmm. Then we're grateful for all those things. Not that they're pleasant.
No, not that they're pleasant, but I love what you're saying. And I'm also wondering, you know, we're the being welcome to somebody else saying, you know, one of your machines is broken, but also like, what if we took on that for ourselves and started looking around going like, are all my machines working well? Huh? Yeah. Maybe not, or maybe so, but maybe that one's a little slower. That one's off a little. I've had my friends laugh when I say this, but one of my personal things is that I'll say, oh, wow, I just love it when I'm wrong. Yeah. And they're like, oh my gosh, why or what? But for me, that experience of when I'm wrong, especially if I've had a story about something that's been unpleasant and I've been hooked in being right, when I'm wrong, it means the story gets to be something else.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you just freed yourself.
Really something so freeing that. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, totally. Oh, wow. I made up the story and then that's how it was.
Yeah. And when we allow ourselves to be wrong or not perfect publicly, what we do is we set a loving example and encourage other people to have the courage to try to go, okay, I don't, you know, our world is so set up with perfect, everybody's Facebook profile, everybody's this, and it's so perfect that there's a learning that's missing. It's like if you grow up with parents who always fight in secret, you don't learn how to disagree. You think it's always perfect. So what the teachers I've been most grateful for are the teachers that have failed publicly and said, look, this is what might happen. This is how you get up and do it again.
Yeah, this is
I'm
how you
grateful for those.
That's beautiful. Yeah, thank you for saying that, because I think there's something so much in the perspective of it. Like if we're hiding all of our work behind closed doors, nobody gets to learn how to do it differently. And then we have a society, which I think we have going on right now, where there is so much of a facade, a public facade of who we are, as you say, with Facebook or, you know, any of these social medias where we're coming across trying to look like the best put together, most happy, loving, experienced being, when there's a lot else going on.
Yeah. It's so important. I mean, packaging is great, but to master the packaging and forget to put anything in it, there's an element missing. So, it's that balance. It's that balance of saying substance and packaging together is wonderful. But if I had to pick one over the other, I would be picking substance. And maybe it doesn't look so good, but there's something there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times we throw away people or experiences because their packaging isn't quite right. And I've often said that some of the greatest gifts life has brought me have had the crappiest wrapping paper, you know. but you have to dive in anyway, and you have to open them. And sometimes the wrapping paper is like cactus thorns, but you still open the package because, again, you have that presupposition. You're trusting life, and you're trusting that whatever's delivered to you from life, there's a gift there. And the way I like to see it is, my job is to find the gift. And I know I had some people go, well, what if you're wrong? And what if it's not like that? What if life really doesn't have your back? And I thought, that's a great question. So if I'm wrong and I die and turns out life never really did have my back, I've lived this life of magic and belief that life had my back. And if I believe that life doesn't have my back, whether it does or doesn't, I'm going to live a miserable life. So it's my choice. You know, do yes. I want to believe in goodness yes. and have a great life and not in an airy fairy, you know, overly innocent, oh, everything, but in choice, we choose to believe, we choose to trust, we choose to look deeper. Those are choices. And those choices grow us.
Those choices do grow us. And that choice, I'm just going to back it up a nudge, which is that choice. Would you say that most things that happen could be seen as neutral?
I do. It's. I think I told you the other night about the mother pouring tea. You
know, please, tell us that story. That's a fantastic story. Yes,
a mother sitting at a table pouring tea for her two daughters. Very neutral. The mother's pouring tea. One daughter is ecstatic. Every time my mother pours me tea, it means my mother loves me and wants to serve me. The other daughter's miserable. Every time my mother pours me tea, it means she thinks I'm an idiot and I don't know how to pour my own tea. Nothing's changed in what the mother's doing. She's pouring tea for each of her daughters. The daughter's story about what it means is giving them pain or joy. And that is so important in moving in life, because it goes back to what we said at the beginning, living from choice and living from joy and choosing joy when we can. And again, not in an airy-fairy, oh, there's no pain, but choosing joy as in the middle of everything, I can choose to be joyful and happy. I can choose to find something to celebrate. The sun came up today. Reading Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. I mean,
fantastic book.
Mm-hmm. Who had the best reason in the world for not being joyful? Here he is in a prison camp, choosing to be joyful, choosing to be happy, choosing to find things to celebrate in the middle of horrendous things. And again, that is a discipline. It's a practice. And it's what we exude. It's what we're contagious with. And we are contagious beings. You know, if I'm hanging around somebody who's depressed, I'm going to be depressed. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to be hard to resist that. My resistance is going to go down. Mm-hmm. If I'm hanging around somebody who's always looking at the magic and always finding joy, I kind of learn to do that by osmosis and I start to feel that joy. So what do I want to be contagious with? That is, because what we're contagious with is our gift to the people around us, whether it's a good gift or not so good gift. What do we want to exude and emanate and embody that we're constantly delivering to life? And again, that is a choice and a discipline. It's easy to go dark, especially in today's world.
No, that's really rich. I'd like to pull another little thread in here, which is epigenetics, which right? Okay. Yeah. Here we are. We have inherited not just the DNA and the physical attributes, but we also inherit the experiences or things that the people we come
the
from.
The trauma.
Would you unfold this a little? Like, part of my question in this is, if I'm inheriting something that came from before me, how do I actually even know that I have choice in that?
Well,
how do I work with that?
I think, first of all, believing you have choice in it shifts your outlook and your ability and your access. But understanding that, at least for me, what we inherit is an essence. And it may have been expressed this way by our ancestor. But when you boil it down to essence, you can choose that essence and express it different ways. In other words,
could you give us an example, actually, something tangible?
Yeah, that's what I'm about to do. The warrior, take the warrior, or take, you know, the man with the knife. Mm. He can be Jack the Ripper slitting throats. He can be a blue-collar butcher chopping meat in a meat shop. He can be a surgeon. He could be Archangel Michael. What is the man with the knife or the sword? Again, that's an archetypal essence. How it's expressed is consciousness, intention, understanding. And so if I come from a long line of murderers, that's a distorted aspect of the warrior energy. It's using that energy of power and violence and dominance to harm. I can take the essence, the pure essence of warrior, and I can say, this is something I've inherited. Do I want to embody it and express it the way my ancestors did? Or do I want to embody and express it at a higher level, at a higher frequency? Do I want to go from Jack the Ripper to being a surgeon? How do I take that and take it to the next level and do it by choice? But again, we can't do that till we own it.
Yes.
That's
the first step.
It is the first step. So discovering it. And I think a lot of us have feelings about what we might have inherited, or we have knowings or attitudes about things that we can't quite figure out where they come from. I love to dive into people's family history.
You work with people who may not even know where they come from.
Yes.
For our audience listening, one of the things that Regina does is works with people who have been orphaned, or people with, or even, you know, if they know their parental lineage, right? But the lineage piece is really
If they're estranged, or if they might not have been orphaned or adopted, but I have people that never met their grandparents, don't even know their grandparents' names or dates of birth. Reconnecting them through all the different family trees I do and through ancestry, and helping them find the stories, old newspaper articles, you know, things where they, oh my gosh, you know, and taking the lineage back as far as you can and finding out, how did my parents grow up? How did my grandparents grow up? What did they go through? What threads and qualities do I maybe have access to that I never realized I had access to? And that's really exciting, because it opens new doors for people.
Yeah. So what I see happening is it's almost like you're helping to paint the backdrop or show where someone came from. And what's interesting also, I love that you're talking about, you know, using newspaper articles or family trees. So this is not, I know a big piece of your work is actually energetics, but we're also talking about real on this earthly plane, searching things out through the means that we have to find the facts here on this physical plane.
Yeah. Yeah. And taking that a step further, you know, in work with, because sometimes I work with families, I'll work with the husband, the wife, their parents, their children, their new spouses, you know, and sometimes it's a big group I work with. But what's really interesting is a couple of the things that I found working with some people who found out different things about their parentage, like maybe that one parent was a victim, one parent was a predator. Understanding essence enough not to go into self-hatred, understanding essence enough to say, I may have violence on this side and victim of violence on this side. How do I not go into self-hatred or thinking I'm damaged goods? How do I go into, again, taking the archetypal essence from each and choosing how can I express that as healing in the world? Because we always have that choice. And even children of divorces, if they're constantly hearing one parent badmouth the other, they're half mom's DNA and half dad's DNA. So what starts to happen inside their psyche is they start to hate half of themselves.
Yeah.
Whatever parent they align with, they hate the part of themselves that's like the other parent. And so they don't have permission to embrace their whole self. So working with that understanding when I'm working with couples that are divorcing, really, really important. How do you honor your spouse's energy that's alive and well inside your child? Really important. And then how do you teach that child how to say, I might have gotten this from dad and this from mom, but now I have a choice on how to make it mine and express it in the world. It's really important to do that.
Oh, that's powerful. So when you're working with these, what I think of like, you know, farm family architecture, where you've got like the parents or the grandparents or the children and you're unpacking. So, well, we could talk about the divorce, but we could also look at something like finding out something happened behind, right in the back.
Yes. Like being a product of rape or
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm imagining that each person, like the answer is different for each person.
Yeah. Mm. It is. It's like totally different.
Chemical connection of all these people coming together with their own parts of the story. And we're looking at how they work it together.
Yeah. Because we're such a conglomeration of not just our DNA and our epigenetic lineage, but then our environment, our soul code, our nurturing and our history, our race, our culture, our education, our spiritual intention. All those things are factors that kind of tweak how we're going to express in the world. So I think, you know, delving in and discovering our own signature and celebrating that and saying how wonderful it is that we're like this, like a million snowflakes. We're like this only design that exists like this in this moment. We're unique. And how do we get to deliver that to life and celebrate that with all its quirks and all its strengths. And again, when you come into this place of full embrace of all you are, you know, your idiosyncrasies, your weird habits, your fears, when you can look at yourself with a fondness, that's not saying you're perfect, you know, here or there, but saying you're perfect in your imperfection. and to really look at yourself with fondness, then you've developed the capacity to love others in that way and give others that permission.
Mm. Right. And that's the thing we're talking about it. And that's catchy. Like that quality, that ability.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when I'm around that, I bloom. And when I'm around that, I want to embody it and pass it on.
Mm. That's, that gets me right in my heart. There's something also in what you're talking about, just to pull the layers back a little bit. To me, it feels like there's, I'd say something like an alchemical moment, or there's something that happens when we take ownership or agency, and you're standing at that point and you realize you could go in a myriad of directions and you have choice with it. There's something about doing that that affects your choices. Would you pull that apart a little bit? Am I correct? Is that part of what I'm seeing here?
Well, I think how I take that in is, I don't think there's any wrong choice, but I think there's an alchemical reaction to everything we do. And so it's like we take who we are and apply ourselves to the moment. We dance with the moment. We apply everything that we are. We deliver it to the moment. And in that delivery, the moment changes and we change. Mm-hmm. And there's an entry point of creation that happens there. It's like fusion. I apply myself to, you know, I could have an amazing outlook and skill set and confidence, and somebody could give me a dire situation that looks like there's no way out, and I will find a way to make that brilliant. Mm-hmm. Or I could have a consciousness that doesn't believe in myself and has lost access to my gifts temporarily, and somebody could give me the best scenario in the world, and I could turn it into something that is a deeper.
Right. So that's where the
failure on the surface. That's a learning experience. Mm-hmm. It's applying who we are to the moment. The moment changes and we change. And there's always, and again, I don't believe there's any mistakes, even if quote unquote, we do something that seems like a failure. It's a lesson. It's a learning curve. It's the opportunity to go into our machinery and say, what's not operating here? You know?
Yeah. And when we are in that alchemical moment, and as you said, say something really horrendous comes up, and your natural impulse, as I imagine yours probably is to find some way to turn it or be with it in a way that unpacks it as a gift. Mm-hmm. Does that then create repercussions where it is more easy to create gifts? I mean, that's my impulse.
I think so. I think, I can't remember what the experiment was called, but there was some experiment where they were looking to see when a particle was a particle and when a wave was. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so what they found was the observer actually influenced and changed what was being observed. So if the observer expected a particle, there was a particle. If the observer expected a wave, there was a wave. So to me, that is like what we are expecting is what we are calling forth. Everything's being broadcast in the universe. Our antenna is up and tuned into what we're expecting. So what we're expecting is what we're bringing in or calling forth. And I think if you take that further, I think the greatest gift we can give to each other as human beings is to see the beauty in each other. Because when we see that, we actually participate in drawing it forth in the moment. And I was going to say creating, but it exists. It's about drawing it
forth
exists. In the moment.
Yeah. So it's about seeing that side of it.
Yes. And it's about welcoming it and celebrating it and calling it forth into this moment of reality. So if I'm looking at somebody and I'm seeing their beauty, I'm more apt to experience their beauty because I'm calling it out.
Yes. And the work that's been done, or there's a lot out there around the power of attraction. Mm-hmm. How does this fall in that range? It feels like it's an aspect of, but a little bit more three-dimensional. What I'm observing is you're saying there's both the choice in how we name something or relate to something. And then there's also the thing itself is going to appear as such because we're choosing to see it that way. We're choosing to call the particle in or the wave in.
Yeah. I believe that's true. And I think the whole law of attraction, there's a lot of things people do with affirmation, but I think the piece that is the activator is the deep sense of knowing, the place where belief and feeling come together and create knowing. That deep knowing is like the secret sauce, you know. There was a beautiful video, I think it was Greg Braden, called How to Pray for Rain. And he was talking about when he met this shaman, and there was a drought, and they were going to go do a ceremony to bring rain in. And when Greg asked him, "Are you going to pray for rain?" he said, "I'm not going to ask for rain because it's going to, it's going to underscore the idea that it's not here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to feel the rain on my skin. I'm going to feel my toes in the mud. I'm going to know the rain, and I'm going to be the experience of rain in this moment." And I think that is the most powerful piece of the whole law of attraction thing. The affirmations, if you're not believing them, they can just separate you further from it. If you're feeling poor and you're going, "I'm prosperous, I'm prosperous, I'm prosperous." And the more you say it, the more you're going, "Okay, when am I going to be prosperous?" You know, you've got to feel it, you know, and even if you give a penny to somebody, the minute you feel you have enough to give, you're starting the cycle of prosperity. It is that it's embodied, you know, that thing that God or spirit can only do for us what it can do through us. And we have to become an instrument and an embodiment of that which we wish to experience in the world. And, you know, I mean, there's hokey old ways we learn this as kids. Remember, like your mom would say, if you want a friend, be one. If you know,
right. But a lot of it can sound hokey, right? But there's a
truth,
operation of truth in it. Yes.
And it really is about embodying it. I had a client that went to some dating meetup, and she said it was terrible. Everybody was just looking for somebody to make them happy. And it's like when you go in empty and you're looking for somebody else to give you something or be your other half or fulfill you, you're going to find emptiness because that's what you're bringing. If you know, relationship, the most beautiful thing about relationship, I think, is to go in not looking for somebody to fill you, but to be so full yourself that you're like an overflowing fountain, and your joy is to share it with everybody who's around you. And that is that, I call it the sovereign beloved. It's being autonomous and being able to be in relationship, but it comes from your relationship to spirit or your own fullness. And that's another part, I think, of being in joy, because then your joy is springing up from inside yourself. It's not dependent on something outside. You know, we're so trained to find meaning, find joy, we have to assign value. We have to bring meaning. We have to generate joy. It's from within. And when you're out there looking for it, you underscore your own emptiness.
Yes. And I'm feeling in that experience, I was sort of tuning into myself as you were saying that, like, there's a mixture of finding joy within, but also deciding that what I'm seeing, to take your earlier thing, is that, like, the choice that this gift that might be in disguise or might be badly wrapped actually holds joy. Right. So there's a combination of bringing something from within, which I can feel as a vibration coming up right now. I can activate that sense of joy. Yeah. But then there's also a choice around, I choose that the results I see are this.
Yes. Yes. And that's that particle wave thing, you know, because you are claiming what you're choosing to see and it's coming to you. And I love, you know, it's like, choice and joy, it is, and even trust, you know, I mean, we choose to trust, and the empty spaces.
I'm going to pause you because I really want people to hear that for this moment. We choose to trust.
Yes.
That's actually a choice. Like it came off really easy, like we choose to trust, but it's actually like, that's a choice.
It's a deep choice.
We're not actually wired as animals necessarily to trust unless that's been proven to us or unless like there's all sorts of conditions around it. All right. I didn't wish to interrupt.
No, it's good you understand.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. We choose to trust. And I remember I was working with somebody in a very vulnerable place, and I chose that I was going to go through a healing journey with this person. And one of the things I told them is, I'm choosing to trust you. I'm not trusting you from this innocent little child that I hope maybe you never hurt me. You probably will hurt me because we're on a healing journey together, but I'm choosing to trust you. I'm choosing to believe you have my back. You want my highest good, that you care, and that you would not willingly or knowingly do something to harm me maliciously.
Yeah. Right.
And in that, my choice to trust you is my adult saying, I don't expect trust to be an easy road, but I'm choosing that this person is somebody I am going to open to and not defend against. It's a big, powerful, and sometimes scary thing, but it is a choice.
What I hear you just do too is really powerful. You were actually like, I imagine you saying this to the person or myself as this person. And it's like, you were actually, I don't know the word teaching is the right word, but you were actually kind of teaching them how to be with you. It was actually giving them an orientation in which to orient to. Is that correct?
Probably without realizing it. Yeah. Because I think our job is to understand our operating system and then share the handbook with the people we love. You know, this is how I work, you know, like I might be Windows, you might be Apple, but if we don't know that, you know, we're never going to open each other's documents, you know?
Yes. And so I just imagine in that conversation with that person, you were showing them your operating system.
Yeah.
And choosing to relate to you like this, knowing that you might hurt me, but knowing that you're not going to do it out of an intention.
And letting them know that they don't have to protect me from truth. Mm. That I could be hurt by it, and I probably will be, because that's how we learn. Mm. And I'm trusting that if it comes up in the scope of healing work, it's part of the work. And it's, and again, choice. When I look at it that way, I can receive it in a whole different way. I'm not a victim being wounded. I'm in Navy SEAL training, having a tough day and strengthening who I am, you know? So,
yes. Mm. So many pieces where I'd love to go. And I'm just going to pull one from real life, which is that I know that there are people who are listening to this and watching this and who have had really hard things happen to them. And I'll just use as a little background story. I worked for about 8 years full-time in working with youth at risk in juvenile correction facilities. And my specialty was teenage girls. And I just saw horrendous things having happened to these young women. And I'm wondering, and those young women at this time are grown women. And I'm wondering from your perspective, and I'm guessing you probably have women just like that, just like, you know, any of us walking in with our damaged background, showing up for a conversation with you, where do you even start with somebody who has had such a damaged past or has had, you know, things happen in their childhood that were just, you know, brutal or even hard to talk about? How do you begin that?
Well, first of all, being fully present to it, not denying it happened, to be an incredibly deep and solid container that whatever they bring, it's not going to faze me. It's not going to be too much for me, because that can damage somebody. If they bring their wound to you and you say, oh, I can't deal with that, it's too much, you've just re-wounded them. Mm-hmm. So whatever they bring, I can hold space for. It can be an atom bomb. I'll hold space for it. So first, bring whatever you come with and I'll receive it and I'll honor it. I'll recognize it and I'll sit with you in the pain of it or the unknown of it. And then when we've sat with it and we've embraced it,
yeah,
in the embrace, it is no longer a wound, it's a seed. Mm. It's like when we cut the earth open and we put a seed in her body. Mm. The earth surrounds that seed with nutrients and water. We surround that wound with love and compassion and understanding and awareness. And that seed grows into something. It becomes our sacred initiation. It becomes our gift. And so a woman who was beaten or raped very often becomes a voice for the same thing. Somebody who was sex trafficked so often becomes a voice for that. Look at the guy who started America's Most Wanted. His child was abducted, you know. When we take our wound and own it, it becomes our gift. And I love the whole story of the hero's journey. I use it a lot in my work with people because it's the thing that makes sense of all the things that we've been through. And I've been through trauma in my life. There's a place where we choose to turn the trauma into our medicine or our immunity. And so, but you can't bypass the gut-wrenching deepening that happens first. And that's why I can't say, oh, it's so great this happened to you, now you're going to be a teacher.
That's what's really important, is not to dismiss it or belittle it or to say, oh, you'll get over it.
No,
seriously,
you have to sit with the horror of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to sit with the horror of it and the pain of it and the discomfort and the ugliness and the shame and all of that stuff. But sit with it without being broken by it. Mm. Where there's a piece of you, it's kind of like one of my favorite analogies is what happens with caterpillars. You know, people think that they grow a cocoon, they go in a cocoon, they grow wings and they become butterflies. They don't. They go in the cocoon and they completely liquefy. They melt down into goo. And the imaginal cells that are in the goo that know what the butterfly is supposed to be form the butterfly. And I think that's what happens when we have a trauma or we have a healing. Our old consciousness is broken and liquefied and destroyed, but matter can be destroyed, but energy can't be. So it just changes form. And so the thing that is old and liquefies and is destroyed has a divine frequency or memory and becomes its next layer of something. And
it
so
has that imaginal cell.
Yes. Yes.
I love the name of that too. Right.
Yes. It's so beautiful. You know, there was an old book called, it was called No Hiding Places. It's from like 40 years ago. It was by a guy named Matthew Anderson. And he had a quote that I love. He said, be very clear that you do not know what your next transformation will look like, For if caterpillars knew about butterflies, they would go out and buy wings, and butterflies would be extinct. Because people are always looking for the shortcut, and there is no shortcut in transformation. You have to liquefy and let yourself come back as something new.
Tina, that is powerful. What a beautiful image. Thank you. We're at time to be wrapping up, but I'm wondering, I know you're just a resource of wisdom. If there's any last piece or thread you feel that our audience today is wanting or needing to hear?
Well, I mean, I guess just knowing we're all butterflies in the making. And like, there's no secrets. I mean, even with what I do, a lot of people say, well, what secrets are you? And it's like, there's no secrets. It's like everything we just said in this interview, this call, it's there's no secrets that exist beyond that. It's all about, how do I meet myself? How do I meet the people I love? How do I meet life and get better and better at applying these things? We are the secret sauce, you know, our attitude, our perception, our outlook. That's the secret.
Yeah. And there's no, and I say this not to be dark, but there's no surviving this. Like, we're going through this experience, and this particular one, you know, might believe many different things, but this particular experience of being a body on this planet right now is going to end at some point. We're going to pass away, and the end, and something else may happen depending on what you hold for beliefs. But this experience right now, this one, I love what you're offering in terms of the perspective of, in this form, we do get to melt down and become a butterfly over and over again within this container. And that happens from our perspective and choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And every time we let go of what we think we know, and or what our we know at the ego level, the imaginal cells of our soul take over and bring us into a higher expression of who we truly are.
It's like, oh, now there's the next layer.
Yeah. So it's ever evolving.
It's ever evolving. Davina, this was just an absolutely beautiful conversation. I'm so glad I got to hang out with you. I got to hang out with your plants. I just love that. Just noticed that we're both like plant loving beings here. I just feel like we're both surrounded in our little plant room together.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's just such a pleasure to have you here. For people who would like to find out more about your work, divinediscovery.com. So Davina can be found at divinediscovery.com.
Yeah.
And Davina, I want to thank you so much. You are offering us a beautiful gift called Living with Joy from Choice, which I believe will give some wonderful pointers to continue for those of you who really dropped into this conversation today, to continue exploring that. I can just imagine many of you with us today are experiencing the reverberations of this conversation and the both the complexity and the simplicity. Yeah. For our listeners who are here with us, I want to thank you for the curiosity, what it takes to actually be present in these conversations. These conversations are really about expanding our consciousness, looking differently at the world around ourselves, taking ownership and being a discovery of these beings that we are here living these lives and what our choices are that we can have in order to have lives that are even closer to what we deeply long for them to be. So thank you all who are here today. And thank you again, Davina.
Thank you so much.
Aloha.